Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. I'm Andy Rowe and Goody's with me as usual. But Big Jim is away this week. So we've called in England's most capped men's international of all time, Ben Youngs. He's got the inside track on the England World Cup campaign. And we're going to look back at his international career and take a look at the latest Premiership action as well. So settle back, enjoy, and make sure that you've subscribed on Spotify.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
How are we, lads?
Youngsy, Lenny, great to have you in place of Jim Hamilton. You're a lot better looking. You've probably got bigger arms. Well, you have got bigger arms. You're not quite as tall, but how are you, pal? Good to be back.
Thanks for having me back on.
Great to have you on, mate.
It's nice to be back on again. I'm good. I'm settled back into family life, which has been nice. So the club gave me a week off, took the first week. So all the boys that were at the World Cup had this week off just gone.
Not the Saris lads, though.
Not the Saris lads. They love their club and they don't like the thought of going to Newcastle away.
Yeah.
So they decided to go straight back in and do that one. So, good on them.
Tell me now, obviously, you went back after the bronze game. First of all, congratulations, buddy. Let's not skip over that.
We'll
go into detail of your career and the World Cup and everything you've achieved. But first and foremost, I'm going to say, what a fucking England career. What an absolute legend. To come from that spotty little kid that was 16 years of age, playing with me at Leicester, coming through that Premiership final, the bag of sick, baptising people on the bus to be England's most capped men's player and, you know, finally retiring on a high note of beating Argentina and getting the bronze medal. Congratulations, pal. But you were given the week off by Leicester after the game to get back to family life, and Dan McKellar's big about families, isn't he? And
yep.
How many days did it take to think, I wish I was rather training them with the kids?
I was pleased to go back in today. I was excited. I was genuinely excited to go back into the club and new setup and everything like that. So got three kids, and to be fair, I think the missus was happy for me to go to training as well.
So it works both ways.
Yeah, with 5 months being away, she had such a system with the kids, you know, the routine in the morning, how to get them at school and everything like that. I've just come back and completely...
You ruined it.
I've ruined it. But no, it's lovely to be home, mate. But equally, it was very nice to go in the club today. And you know, there's been a lot of change at the club. New faces, new coaching staff. So it was an exciting day, actually. I really enjoyed it. It was good.
What sort of a dad are you? Do you get the kids out there practicing their spirals off the ground, box kicks already? Like what?
How do you spiral it off the ground?
I don't know.
What you want
about? It's a halfback thing.
Spiral it off the ground?
No, like the spiral pass. Scooping it out of a ruck.
Oh, sorry. No. My son, he's just started playing at Mark Harborough. So he plays there on a Sunday, but my dad always was very laid back about it. He used to just let us go do our thing and not overthink it and just let us enjoy it. And I've got the same approach. So if he takes a shine to it, great. If he doesn't, no issues. So just let it unfold, mate. I'm not one of those that's going to be out there for hours. Mainly because also, I'm so exhausted come the end of training. The last thing I want to do is pick up a ball and kick it around with my son. And equally, I don't want to get the hockey stick out of my daughter and start whacking balls either. So a bit of wrestling on the sofa is fine.
Goody, you kept yourself busy over the weekend away from the family.
I did. Just on Saturday, I was up in Sunderland. Massive shout out to Sunderland Rugby Club. I did their 150th anniversary dinner at the weekend on Saturday night, and getting back Sunday, I just needed to hug the kids. I needed to tell them I loved them. It was a very tough Saturday night. It was a great Saturday night. Actually, it wasn't tough Saturday night. It was Sunday morning was tough. I think the same guy that dropped me back at the hotel picked me up about 3 hours later to take me to the airport. So great lads in Sunderland. I maybe indulged a little bit too much, but I was a good dad. So I did the dinner Saturday night. And then I was looking at flights to come back, and there was a 9:15 flight in the morning back from Newcastle to Heathrow, or an 11:30 flight. And being the good dad I am, I got the early one. I could have had a lie-in and then got the 11:30 flight, But then it was back home by about 10 to 11. Just being a family man again. So hung over to hell. We went to fireworks night last night as well. And I was nearly falling asleep watching the fireworks. I was that fucked. But yeah, good weekend up in Sunderland. Good people, good rugby club. They're getting three teams out, which not many junior rugby clubs are doing since COVID. So yeah, had a really good night up there. I didn't regret it. I regretted drinking as much as I did on Sunday. But here we are with the great England's most capped men's player. Did you get steaming at the weekend? Well, I mean, professionals, do they even drink these days?
Yeah, we had a good go actually on Sunday after the semi-final as well. We had a good go at it then as well.
Nice.
Good crack. So good few blowouts when we were out there.
What does a good go look like for an England international side? Like, are you guys having a six pack of Asahi and then calling it a night, or are you pushing through to the early hours of the morning? Or
no, pushing through. Lads. So some lads, not myself, but some boys after the bronze game, we got back to the hotel because like night kickoff so late, so the time we get back to the hotel is 1:30 anyway. Some boys went all the way through, some girls coming out for breakfast and the girls were still going, so good on them. A few hours sleep and then we got the bus in, and then we went on a boat in Paris down the river there. So it was a good day, mate. Very fun.
It's difficult, isn't it? 30 odd lads plus management all together. It's hard wherever you go in life to find a bar or a venue that will happily let 30 to 40 to probably 50 when you add everyone in, big blokes, loose. Was it just in-house in a hotel room, or you're out and about as well?
No, a lot of the time, Beauty, it's obviously it is in-house, like a lot of the time, because you come back to the hotel so late after games and if you want to have a drink. And also quite a bit of the time, you know, Alad, who's absolutely legend and class, he'll say, like, boys, like, no one's having a drink, you know, after a game, whatever. Or if there was a certain game, he might go, boys, if you want to go for it, go for it. And then make sure that you do your recovery and get yourself sorted. And do you know what I mean? So it's almost planned. And then in terms of venues and stuff, luckily we've got Charlotte Gibbons, who's the absolute goat of team managers. She's unbelievable. So she sorts everything out. So it's all done ahead, because otherwise, you're right, you can't get in, and then you get splinter groups and, you know, you kind of, everyone goes off in their own place because you can't get in. And so we didn't have any of that. We were able to stick together as a team and have a good old social and enjoy it, you know. It kind of felt like the end of a season in a way, like almost like the end of a summer tour, you know, when you finish. But it had been 5 months. It was such a long time that it did have that feeling. So that was good fun.
So no one met Mark Talaire in the strip club. That's where he was when he got caught out.
Is that what he got done
for? Yes, it was.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
Are we sure about that?
My sources tell me, so.
We'll take it with a pinch of salt, but if that's what your sources is.
True. It's a tight-knit group, the All Blacks. They don't let much out, but you weren't there. It wasn't me.
No, I wasn't in there, Goody. It wasn't me, mate. I wasn't there with him.
We'll come back and unpick the World Cup campaign shortly, but there's a question in the run sheet that says, how does it feel to be most capped men's England international of all time? And it's quite like a superficial question, but when you actually look at that and look at it in its entirety and think about all the great players that have played for England over the years and all the amazing games, and it must be quite overwhelming to process that in your head, thinking I'm at the top of that list.
Yeah, I guess I never see myself as that person. Like, I just see myself as dedicated a huge amount of my career to playing for England and had the fortunate opportunity of being playing that many times. And I guess, you know, I think when I reflect on it now, and maybe during, you know, when the Six Nations starts, maybe that's when I'll probably look at it and go, wow, like, that was some achievement and some effort to do all that. I'm aware of how much is taken out of me, and I'm aware that it was definitely the right time for me to call it, because someone said to me, there's two things that will give up, either your body or your mind. You know, it depends what comes first. And that was the thing. I'm like, my body feels good, but I didn't have it in me in the head to go do it. So it's bizarre to think I've done it that many times. It's something I'm really proud of. And I think it's something over time I'll then reflect on and go, yeah, that was a great period of my life and time, and what an achievement. But I kind of look at others in that light, you know, like guys like Courtney Laws, and think what a player he is and how many times he did it and stuff like that. And
not as many as you.
Not as many as me, but he had a shed load of injuries. So, you know, you have a bit of fortune along the way, because, you know, luckily I've been pretty fit along the way.
Have you got a tattoo yet with 127 on or anything like that?
No, I haven't, mate. No, I haven't.
You don't strike me as a tattoo man, knowing you.
I've not converted to a tattoo man yet. I'm not ruling it out, but I'm certainly not getting one tomorrow, put it that way.
What about signing autographs? Jason Leonard used to do 114, I think.
Did he?
Yeah. Did he?
You got 127, Ben Young's 127, or?
I mean, it's not something I've considered, but did he do that, did he?
Yeah, get it in there.
No, I don't know, lad. It's just not me, and I'm just not
No,
sure.
It's not, is it?
It's not me, mate. But yeah, it's like I say, it's nice. I'm very proud of it, but equally, I was very pleased to walk away and be done with it, you know?
Do you know what? The mental challenge of going to camp, and it's we talked about it on here before, it's very different for different players, right? you kind of know where you are in a pecking order, but there's always that anxiety, that edge around, am I going to get picked? Am I going to be back to the club? People forget the mental side of it all. And that's massive, isn't it, Lenny?
It is, mate. It is. And I think that's the bit that, like you say, that people probably aren't quite aware of, is everything that comes with it. So like you see a snippet on the 80 minutes on a Saturday, which is the best part of the job. It is incredible. And that's I'll miss it. It is an honour. It's a privilege. Playing in front of big crowds, the game, it is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But during the whole week, it's all the build-up, it's the meetings, it's the dealing with that, it's being away, it's everything else. So one thing I would say is that the longer you've been there and the more experienced you are, is actually the more, I suppose, I felt there was a more this expectation to perform every time, because if you didn't, they wanted the next guy in.
Yeah.
Like, you've been there for a long time, they want that next guy in. So I almost felt towards the end, like it was certainly the last few years, it's like you have to perform so well, because they just want change, they want the next, you know, and it'll be the same now for a group. There's, you know, there's guys in that team now that, you know, can they make the next World Cup? Maybe, but maybe not, I'm not sure. But there'll come a time where people, public, media, whatever, they'll want change, just because they will. It gets exhausting.
Imagine being Goody, though, when he plays for England and he plays the absolute game of his life, the best he's ever played, and the whole country still wants someone else to be playing team.
I don't think that ever happened, Andy Rowe, that I played the best game of my life in an England shirt, but 127 caps. And there's all these other pretenders that wanted the shirt, but everyone wanted Lenny to play because he was the boy, right? You don't get that many caps by fluke. You know, he's been at the top of his game for England and for Leicester for absolutely... How are you doing it, Lenny? Since that baptism on the bus, I've got no idea, but fair play to you.
I think it's when we roomed together in Poland on that pre-season.
Oh, how bad was that?
Oh, what happened? What happened?
Nothing. He was nearly still at school, I think.
Talk us through it.
We were on a pre-season camp in Poland near Krakow, and it was like a Olympic training venue where you did all this cryotherapy, but it was like going back in the dark ages. And we went on some horrible pre-season tours where they were like, let's treat them like dogs and they'll train really hard and all that stuff.
Save the budget.
Yeah. No one spent any money on all that stuff. And then you hear about Saracens going to Miami and all these other places. Like, Leicester like that. What? I just remember Owen Finnegan, who was an Aussie legend.
The big O.
Yeah. He'd won the World Cup. He used to just walk around with his top off and he had a body like a bag of sick. And the boy, like, he's a World Cup winner, but he was the worst trainer I've ever seen in my life.
Awful.
People look at him, and I now think people used to look at me like this, go, how is he ever a professional rugby player? But he was a world champion. And he was one of those players that on the pitch, he was half decent. Monday to Friday, he was like...
Horrendous.
Awful, yeah.
Awful.
We roomed together, and he used to walk past our room with just, like, you could only do the cryotherapy in, like, either Speedos or cycling shorts, and then they put something on your ears and some gloves, and you're just in it with Holf. We called him Finner Holf, after Michael Holford, who was also a hanging bag of kit. He makes me look $1 million. So Owen Finnegan he came to Leicester and he was a bit of a legend, won a World Cup, but looked like a bag of six. So good man as well. He won't mind me saying
it. Good man.
Let's dig into the World Cup, because that campaign that you guys have just been through started off horrendously, didn't it? You lost to Fiji. Everyone had written you off at that stage. No one's expecting you to get anywhere. And then you managed to get your way through to a bronze medal, which is epic. Talk us through sort of your experience of that camp and what unfolded along the way.
With the pre-season games, I think, if we start with them, I think, you know, you can deal with the losses. It was more the performances. That was the bit, you know, with the warm-up games was like, we hadn't actually performed, or we hadn't shown or transferred what we'd actually been working on. There's like almost nothing worse than like you work on something for so long and then you go out there and you don't put it out there. So when we played Wales away and then at home and then Ireland away, there wasn't really much like transfer in terms of what we were working on, what we're doing and seeing it on the pitch, which was pretty frustrating, because you're doing everything you can to pinpoint why. And then we got to Fiji.
Was there a why or not? Or is it just things aren't, because sometimes things don't click, do they? All the preparation in the world and it's hard to put your finger on stuff.
I think that's what we found difficult. It was hard to kind of really put our finger on what aspect of the game weren't working, because it felt like at the time, it felt like so many parts weren't quite married up and syncing and working together. And then obviously losing to Fiji was kind of, it was bizarre, because it was almost like almost as low as it can get. And I don't mean that disrespectfully to Fiji, I really don't. But that's a game that, you know, we would always go in expecting, if we perform right, that we win.
With England's resources and the amount of players you've got and the money and everything you have.
Yeah, exactly right. Don't get me wrong, some of the best players in the world are Fijian. You know, we all know that. But at home, at Twickenham, ahead of a World Cup, you know, that is a game that you know, we should put away. So we had a couple of days off after that. I think we had sort of 3 days and we met on the Wednesday. And we had a pretty, well, it was very needed, but we had a good review that was kind of got to, right, we need to sort this out, we need to do that, we need to do that. And then when we flew to France, the whole mindset kind of changed. And what I mean by that is like the boys and it's the players that massively stepped up. So your courts, your forwardies, your Genjis, Faz, although he wasn't available for the first few games. But
was there like a meeting that they actually pulled everyone together or was it just over time?
No, we had got our leadership meetings anyway, but on the pitch, we were just like, we really grabbed hold of it and like drove train and like pushed it.
The players did.
Players did, yeah, really got hold of it and did an unbelievable job really. And I kind of think everyone else that hadn't been to World Cup or hadn't like necessarily quite realised the magnitude of a World Cup kind of saw all us go like the intensity training rise, the details within it, how we're going about it, how we're pushing training. I think kind of people like, wow, okay, I get it. It's like, it's showtime almost. And it dragged almost the others with us. Fair play that, you know, that Argentinian game, 40, given we had a red card, we kind of had to change how we played a little bit. It almost made the game plan almost a bit simpler for us. But he'd been brilliant those 2 weeks leading up to it, as had Courts and so many others in terms of their leadership. Jamie George, another one, so Marrow. And I think that first game was so important for both us and Argentina, because you lose that first one, you then kind of going, right.
Cup final every week, isn't it?
Well, it is Goody, and then that becomes exhausting in its own right.
Yeah.
So once we won that one, you know, we then had a bit of momentum, beat Japan, and then it kind of went from there. But, I mean, if you look at it as a whole, really, you know, until we met South Africa, you'd always expect us to beat those teams. It's not as if we didn't really come across anyone until the semi-final against a team that, you know, that I wouldn't, you know, back ourselves to go and win.
Yeah. Were the boys getting a feeling of, you know, people are against us here a bit, or was it...
Just own it, Goody. You see it, you were against the team.
Well, I did. I said, the way we were playing, obviously the Argentina game, brilliant in terms of what Lenny just said, the way Curry gets sent off, the attitude and the way George Ford played was ridiculously good. You know, against Japan, we ended up scoring a few tries towards the back end of the game, but it was a little bit underwhelming.
Yeah.
Chile was a 70-odd points in the end. We played... Tried to move the ball a lot, didn't we, against Chile? And then the mentality of that Samoa game, you know you've already qualified. Did it feel like you were fielding a lot of questions around the way you were playing and stuff?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're fully aware of the way that we were playing and probably the lack of, I suppose, creativity that we had and the amount of opportunities we were creating were kind of limited. But I think given the change in coaching and everything like that and the situation of the pre-season results and all that, that maybe we kind of had to strip it back a little bit again just to kind of go back to a game model that will be best suited for trying to win. And I think that we, you know, we kind of, our hand was forced a little bit with that, I reckon. I'll be really interested to see how it looks during the Six Nations and how the team looks on the tour and next autumn in terms of how does that evolve, because the way that we play has to evolve.
And as a nine that loves playing ball in hand, you know, yes, you have to box kick a lot, and that's the way the game is at times at international level. You know, across the team, there's exciting players in that back line. But the game plan suited it game to game to just get wins right. Were some of the players a bit frustrated about how the game was set up, or is it just this is how we have to play to get to, you know, the semi-final or a final and gives us our greatest chance of winning?
I think there was definitely a collective buy-in and understanding that we have to play this way because this gives us best opportunity in terms of the time together, in terms of what we have, those players and all that. Like, we've got some exceptional talented players. We have, you're right, Goody, and, you know, your guys like Marcus Smith, Joe March and like Johnny May, like, he got limited opportunities. But what he did do was do an unbelievable job for us in terms of what we needed from him, which was go win the ball back in the air, chase kicks, be really good defensively on that edge and all those bits. So this is what I mean. Like, I'd be interested to see how it unfolds, like, moving forward in terms of that evolution of the side and in terms of how they play. And obviously Felix Jones is joining, which I think is, you know, by all accounts I've heard nothing but really, really good things about him, and that's proven in terms of he's gone back to back with the World Cup. But I do think we were just aware that this style suits us best in this tournament. But that style is also a style that I played with for a couple of years at Leicester. You know, it's a very high kicking pressured game with a dominant forward pack. You know, if you don't have the pack that's dominant, then I think that's where potentially at Leicester I found it difficult. If you didn't get front foot and you didn't get dominance at set piece and all that and the reward from kicking, and as I say, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds, because if we don't get dominance moving forward, you know, are we going to evolve our game to be more expansive and move it and being able to play a different style?
And Steve, as a head coach, is a guy that's certainly coached that one way for a long time. Are you confident that Steve's got that ability in him, or someone else has within the group, to say, look, we've got to change our game? Because it's been this similar way of playing for quite some time, even under Eddie a bit, wasn't it, towards the end?
Yeah, and I think he definitely has, because he's now got 4 years to plan out where he wants to be with it. You know, where does he want to be in a year? Where does he want to be in 2 years? What does it, you know, and, you know, he's extremely data-driven, and he'll probably be dictated to him a little bit by the data in terms of how he wants to play and when he wants to evolve it. But of course, he, you know, he's a coach that wants to improve, wants to get better, and he's going to bring in Felix Jones. So they're going to evolve. They're going to get more expansive in the way they want to play and be really difficult to beat, whether that's wet or in the dry or whatever, and be able to play both ways. But that's going to take a bit of time. And that's what I'm saying. I'd be interested to see, like, you know, when does this evolution happen? Because it will happen.
You mentioned the boat cruise after the third place playoff bronze medal game that you won. Was Steve on the boat, like, with his speedos on, tops off, necking pints left, right and centre, or what? Hey, lads, I can neck a pint!
Steve was not on the boat, no. He was not on the boat. No. A lot of the staff were, but no, he wasn't, no. You've got to get the balance right between being a coach and where you integrate and when you integrate with players. Yeah. And when the boys are on an all-day social, I'm not sure that's the right time for you.
Yeah, I could just see Steve tops off.
To integrate, you know what I mean? So, yeah. No, he wasn't present.
You mentioned before about the Springboks being the first real big side that you had to face in the tournament. Do you look back with any regrets, or do you still look back and think, God, we overachieved, we did really well here to get what we got? Or is there some sort of itch that hasn't been scratched?
Basically, Andy Rowe saying, was it a fucking penalty at that scrum?
What do you think it was? Do you think it was a pen, Goody, or not? No.
Well, Jim said he thought he got it spot on, and I said he's given a penalty because Genji was on his knee to start off with and then bounced back up, and reset could have been given, but I think I said I like, probably got to agree with him. And if he's seen knee down, you've got to back the ref, haven't you?
Do you know what the problem is as well? I think the perception at that point had been that we were massively under the pressure, because I think there'd been three pens up to that point. So, you know, like, I think had there been no pens up to that point and then he goes down, I think he just blows reset, you know, like losing your foot and lads, let's go again. So the South African game was, I really thought we, with 10 minutes to go or whatever it was until RG Schneiderman scored, I thought we're going to do this. Like, we're exactly where we need to be.
I was already thinking the All Blacks will have won the World Cup here. Yeah.
Arrogance.
But then when he scored, you're thinking, right, all the momentum's with Africa. We don't want set pieces. And I think tactically, up to that point, we'd been brilliant in terms of going to kick to contestable. But we had to change. We should have gone kick it long, stay away from contest, because as soon as you go contest, it only takes one knock on scrum. Like, boot it as long as you can. Let them mark it. That's fine. They can have a scrum pen in their own 22. But as soon as we started going contestable still on the halfway and landing on halfway, I think that was when, you know, tactically the messages were coming on, but we weren't able to adapt. And I think that was the bit that was like, oh, if we just made that little change, maybe. I'm not saying we would have still done it. You know, they are a phenomenal team. And the way they've won, to think the route to the final and winning it is incredible. So it was a tough one to take, that one.
And Andre Pollard kicks the winner. You're all back in Leicester now.
I spoke to him after the game when we played them, but he's such a good bloke. He got left out originally, man.
Yeah.
Which you all know, you know. Everyone said, oh, he'll get called up regardless, and they were doing it, but he wasn't. He was just until Malcolm Marks got injured, then he come in. But until that point, he wasn't going.
Willie Leroux a good bloke, or?
I don't know. Did you not play with him at Wasps, Goody?
I didn't play with him. I interviewed him a fair few times when I was hosting their pre-match, but he's a lovely bloke, Willie Leroux is. I mean, it didn't look good, that celebration.
No, we all win games, like nail-biting games, by the smallest of margins. But like, I don't think it's like, that's not necessary, is it? Like, you know, when you purposely make it, you know.
You run 50 metres.
Yeah, you've thought about that, haven't you? You've run 50 metres to go and scream and push and like, come on, mate. Like, you won. Like, shouldn't that be enough? Do you know what I mean? Win and be done with it. Do you know what I mean? No one needs that.
Did you have a beer with them afterwards? Like, did it come up? Like, was it made light of with the box afterwards at all? Or was it all pretty hostile?
No one. I don't think anyone brought it up with him or went and saw him or vice versa. So, look, it's one of those in that you do it and, you know, who knows? Maybe he'd do it again. Maybe he wouldn't. I don't know. You'd have to ask him. But I went and saw, I got with Jasper and Andre after the game in their sheds. But no, I didn't see Leroux. And he didn't come into our place. So I don't know, maybe he's got some Maybe he's got some beef that we don't know about with one of the lads. I'm not sure, but yeah.
I reckon it's got a little bit to do with the whole thing around the celebrating. Yeah, he was a Wasp player. Saracens boys love a celebration. Ben Earl loves it. Like, I saw Ben Earl at the weekend. Lenny, did you watch the game?
I did.
Leicester got a scrum penalty, right? And Ben Earl is cheering. And I'm like, it's against you, pal. I'm like, amazing.
No, such a great bloke. But my God, he gets into it, doesn't he? Like, yeah. You just think, oh, come on.
But
come
not on, when man, he scores a try.
He just gives double thumbs up. Just gives his thumbs up like that.
Yeah, he's more excited about that.
I just wonder with Villy Leroux whether it's down to that Saracens thing, a bit of, you know, he obviously played in the Prem, he got rinsed a few times when he came over here, didn't he, in terms of how he played. It was over the top. But also, how many people have ever been to World Cup semi-final and won it in that manner with all the emotion? How do you know how you're going to react? But he probably looks back on it now and goes, oh shit, I look like a tool.
We've seen a lot of close matches in Rugby yeah. World Cup. He's the first person that I've ever seen behave like that. Like, what a dick.
Running 50 metres, yeah, and celebrate. Yeah, exactly.
He's one of those, you'll have this perception now, and then when you actually meet him, you're like, oh, what a champion of a bloke.
He's a really good guy, genuinely. Like, but people change when they get on a rugby field, don't they?
Yeah, had we won that game by a point, one of our lads might have gone absolutely bonkers. You just don't know, do you? You know, like, in those fine margins, winning by a point, like, you just don't know. But yeah, it is what it is.
It's the Ben Earl analogy, though, right? Because Ben Earl is genuinely one of the nicest blokes. He's a funny guy. He just loves everything about life, doesn't he? Like,
yeah.
He's like an Energizer bunny. If you don't know him and you're seeing him celebrate, you're thinking, what a prick he is. But do you know what I mean? Because it's not your team. But Villy's was way over the top. So you should have slotted him. You should have ran on and just slotted him.
But I was in the grandstand, mate, with my head in my hand. Thinking,
stop
oh
me. Climb down. And yeah.
Let me at him. Scrappy do.
What happens after that game? Do you guys, obviously, got the bronze medal match coming up. What happens after that semi-final game? Do you guys just get on the beers and, like, cut loose?
After that game, the boys were really hurting. And rightly so. Like, you know, that was a tough one to take. And I think given, you know, losing to them in 19 as well. But, like, in 19, that, you know, that was, we were beaten comfortably by them, you know. Where this one was almost, it almost hurt as, in a weird way as more because it was so close.
Yeah.
So the boys were beat up and down, got back to the hotel, had a few drinks. And then we woke up the next day and then Al had sort of put out a schedule and said, look, we won't start training until Tuesday afternoon. And it will just be meetings and a walkthrough. So we decided it'd be a good idea to get to Paris and go find a nice bar. And we just sat outside and got on it all afternoon and all day, so, and all evening.
Were there many fans knocking around?
There was, actually, mate. We bumped into Georgie Gregan, absolute legend. So
he's a fan. He's just called George Gregan. I love it.
Big fan of mine, George Gregan.
George, so he actually was walking, and then we collared him, and he actually had a pint with us, actually, so good on him.
He's a good boy, yeah.
Yeah, there was a good few amount of fans, actually. We were pretty much parked on the M1 in terms of traffic, in terms of footfall going past us, so we weren't too inspicuous, and we're having a good drink, and yeah, plenty of people were kind of very polite and very nice to us. So we did that, mate, and then we didn't pick up a rugby ball till Wednesday. Actually trained on Wednesday, just went through the tactics and the game plan against Argentina Thursday off, and then played Friday. So we went in there with one sesh. It's bizarre, isn't it? Because you kind of, when you look at it, you think come third, like, that's still an amazing achievement. But when you look at it realistically, it's like, we weren't, in my opinion, the third best team there. Like, there was, you know, France were very, very good. Ireland were outstanding. So it was kind of weird feeling with that in terms of, like, now when I look, you know, look back, you're like, well, okay. But, you know, I'm still not complaining about it. It's still nice to finish on that high and that group of players. And also, you know, the other thing we spoke about is, you know, Ireland and France, right? You lose a quarterfinal, you go home. It's a long time till you play again. It's a long time to reflect till that group meet up for the Six Nations. As disappointed as we are after semi-final, we felt that we were very much like, we get to have an opportunity to play one more game, to leave on a high, so that when this group, whoever's in that group and they meet again, they've got some momentum. They've, do you know what I mean? They've been able to get another game under their belt after a horrible defeat. And that was important to us. So we made hard work of it against Argentina, but we got there in the end, and that was important. So when the group meet again, it's good, whereas it's a long old wait for maybe those other teams that till they get to go again.
When you look at the halves that you've got, the number nines coming through a system, we mentioned that there's loads of them. I mean, Danny Kerr hasn't retired yet, but if you're looking at the young guys that are coming through, who are you picking as, like, the guys to lead us on into the future?
In my opinion, the next group that I think will kind of contest for that 9 and 21 shirt will be Mitch. It's going to be JVP. It's going to be Rafi Quirk. Bless him, if he can just stay fit and get a run of games. I still think Harry Randall's got a lot to give. can be a real impactful player in terms of his busyness, the way he plays the game, speed of ball and everything like that. So I think those four really, and no doubt now to the next World Cup, 4 years, there'll be someone that will come through. You know, there will be from another club as well. So right now I look at those four and I think, you know, they've got some really good talent there that will bout that out.
Obviously you announced it was going to be your last game in the bronze medal game. Courtney Laws announced it as well. Obviously, he didn't play. We've seen Johnny May retire. Is there like a schedule going to come out of other guys, or was it talked about within the group around what everyone's doing kind of individually? Because looking at it, your mates with Coley.
Yeah.
Coley's about 423 right now and he's still gearing and he's still gearing well. But you know what I mean? There's questions around other players as well. Was it something spoken about internally or not at all? Just individual decisions?
I suppose individual decisions. And, you know, for me, I was always felt, Goody, like, I felt like this World Cup was achievable for me to make and be a part of, but I always knew that I was done after it. Yeah. Regardless, this was it. So I think Courtney was the same as me. Johnny May was the same as me. Originally, Johnny wasn't in the, made the squad and then got called up, didn't he, because of Ant Watson's injury. So all three of us, I know, were very clear that this is when it's ending. And for the other guys, I think they wanted to probably come back, settle in at home, do some club rugby, have a little bit of thought and a bit of time before potentially deciding what they want to do. But I'd say that there's three of us that have announced it, but the likelihood is I think there'll be more to follow when they feel the time's right to maybe announce that or what have you. But I felt really privileged and lucky to be able to walk away on my terms. You know, I don't know what would have happened to Six Nations, you know, but I don't need to worry about that now because I knew that I was ending then and that was it. And that was a nice way for me to finish, I think.
Six Nations, you'll be available for some corporate appearances with me then?
Yes, I will be. I will be available for corporate.
There you go. Now we're talking.
There we go.
Is there any chat about the Lions? Obviously, Lions is 2 years away, and most people would say you have to play for your country to play for the Lions. There are obviously certain times when that doesn't count. But is that in some of the boys' thought process as well, that are on the edge of, can I make 4 years? Probably not, but there is a Lions tour in 2 years, and that's a carrot that I want? Because then Steve has to make a decision of what's best for the team and the individual, or just the individual, or just the team, doesn't he?
Definitely, mate. And I think there'll definitely be players. I don't know the age profile of all of them. I really don't. But I know that some lads, they're probably, in fact, they could definitely make the Lions in 2 years, but they may not make it the World Cup in 4 years. And, you know, there'll definitely be desires to play for England, get the Lions tour. And then it's almost, you come back from that, which takes so much out of you. So the older you are, the more it takes out of you anyway. So you go on a Lions tour where you're kind of at an age where, like, you know, you're still 2 years out from a World Cup. You've gone on a massive Lions tour. You have literally 3 weeks holiday and then you're back in the Prem and the autumn and it all starts again. So, yeah, I think there will be players that are definitely targeting the Lions. I think there'll be players that will go, I really want to get to, you know, go to Australia, tour that, and then see how I feel after that and see what it is. But like I said to you then, earlier, mate, either you make that call or the coach makes it for you. And it depends which route you want to go down.
So now, Ben, when you look back at your career in international test footy, where do you see the biggest highlight? If you could pinpoint a game or a moment that you had, you could have a couple if you want. What was your biggest highlight playing for England?
I suppose I've got a couple. One, playing alongside my brother
for
England. I think that's an incredible moment for me in the family. New Zealand semi-final of the World Cup.
Yeah.
Mainly because that was probably as in sync and a team and performance I've ever had in terms of a group of everyone. It had to be right to beat them. It had to be. But everyone was like, that was a very special performance from a group of players that I was a part of.
Just while you're talking on that, how does a team get that in sync? Because that's the ultimate goal, isn't
it? It was a worldie of a performance.
It was, Goody. And like, do you know what? That's the hardest thing, because if you'd want, that's what you want every week, right?
Yeah.
But it's just, how do you get that? I guess it's, tactically, we were brilliant that day, but mentally, we were exactly where we needed to be. Like, we were on the absolute edge of, I don't know what you would call it, flow state. I don't know whatever it is, but it was just like, it was a perfect performance. And I think that for me is one of the greatest sort of games and moments and sporting team I've been a part of.
And that's the beauty of sport though, right? If you could bottle that
and
everyone could produce it every week, it wouldn't be fun. Because there's no jeopardy in it. You know, I go back to that 2019 game and nothing gave me more pleasure than speaking to Andy Rowe on the Monday on the podcast, being an arrogant Kiwi. Because you're like,
we're going to blitz you by 30.
I'm like, all right, mate, here we are. How are you? But that's why we watch sport, I think. That's what everyone's trying to achieve, yet very rarely does it happen. And to be able to bottle that would have been unbelievable. The performance was probably England's greatest ever performance, I'd say.
Yeah, well, let's relive it a little bit. Like, let's dig into the mental side of it, because that's the key, right? The mental side of it, where you got to. Did you have like a mental skills coach? I know Gilbert Anoka works with the All Blacks. Do you guys have someone like that, or was there a process that you went through in the week leading up to that game to get that performance?
Do you know what? I think one of the biggest things actually is we played New Zealand in that autumn. We played them in the autumn 2018, and Courtney charged down Perenara. Underhill picked up, went in and out of Barrett and scored, and it got disallowed, right? And we lost that game. I think we lost by 2 points or 3 points. But we came in the sheds after. And to a man, we knew that we had the game plan and we knew we could beat them like we did. Now, we were fully aware and we thought, we will meet these guys. If the routes go the way we think the World Cup and the results go the way, we will meet them in the semis. And it was like we knew internally like we could beat them. And I think also the mindset and the way that week was built up by Eddie in terms of the meetings he took, the way he spoke about how we're going to play, and he's a brilliant in terms of like building that game plan and then like almost like a salesman, like believing it and your way you go, and like we're going to do this and this is how it's going to play out and then we're going to do that.
He was good a few years ago, let's clear that up. He's fucking shocking now. He's Eddie Jones.
How's he selling it to you though in the week leading up? You're coming up against the All Blacks, who are supposed to hose you,
things like that. Like no one thinks we can win, boys, but that's all right, we know we can, and this is how we're going to do it, and this is what we're going to do. And they talk about pressure and dealing with that. They can't deal with it. They won't deal with the pressure and put, you know, all these different things. But funny enough, we trained shocking on the Tuesday, I think it was. Like, we were so bad on the Tuesday before that game. And they brought us, like, we actually had a leadership group at that point, and he gave us a bit of a hosing, actually. He told us, like, we're not where we need to be and blah, 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 blah. But it was actually brilliant. It was like, it was a bit of a stroke of genius again, because it just kind of like resharpened it a little bit. And yeah, we got where we needed to be. So that for me is the greatest performance. And then I suppose one other one was 2016 winning the Grand Slam, because on the back of 2015,
yeah,
and I suppose the absolute wheels falling off in terms of the World Cup and not getting out of our pool and the manner we did and all that, to then kind of being a post World Cup, you know, all the coaches going and a bit of disarray, and he came in and then actually going to win a Grand Slam. That was a really satisfying sort of campaign as well. So yeah, I suppose they're my three moments.
I've got an individual moment of watching you play for England that was my favourite. The try you scored against Australia at Twickenham. Because it was a tight game and you flipped the game on its head by quick tap penalty. Everyone's like, fuck, wow. It was unbelievable. And that was, for me, that was an individual moment. You got a favourite individual moment apart from playing with your brother, which obviously is, you know, ridiculously special, that no one can even imagine pulling on, or not many people can imagine pulling on an England jersey and standing next to your brother and playing.
Do you know what, Goody? That moment was a real, because like beating the Aussies is always great.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's easy now, but back in the day it was tough, right?
Yeah. Back in the day it was tough. And then I think like that tap and then the dummy and just, yeah, it was a nice bit of play. And I guess like in that period I felt like so encouraged to go and express yourself and play and go be you and take people on and do all that. So that was a nice moment. That, and then probably the dummy for a line-out, which was the first try against Aussies, which was that as well. Mate, never complain about beating the Aussies, but that moment, yeah, I agree with you actually, mate. That was probably that was definitely a highlight.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
The euphoria when you score a try at Twickenham must be fucking loose.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. I did it once. I did it once. Against Italy. New Zealand. Italy, yeah. Yeah. But it is there, isn't it? And that's my vision of that try you scored with the tap penalty, with the dummy. Like, big licks in front of the stand and deserve it. You can't ever imagine that feeling unless you've done it, right? And you don't know how you're going to react when you do it.
No, you don't. I remember we played France in 2015. It was the last game of Six Nations. And we won like 42-35, something like that. Do you remember that mad game?
Yeah.
At Twickenham.
Yeah.
And I remember that game and I scored in that one. Scored two in that one, actually. And like, one of them I scored. And like you say, like, I just like kind of lost the plot. Like, I don't even know what was like. The noise and the, like something comes out of you. You just like, yeah, what a place to play rugby, Twickenham, in terms of when the place is rocking, it's class.
Now, I know you mentioned Eddie Jones and you had a really good relationship with him. He gave you a boatload of caps as well, deservedly so. What's happened to him? The poor bloke's gone senile. He hasn't won a game in about 6 years. Like, leading into that game we spoke about in New Zealand and getting you to where you got to, he was a genius at the time.
Yeah.
But the wheels have come off. Have you spoke to him? Is he all right?
No, I don't know what's happened there. But like, obviously having worked with him, watching it from the outside, like I was surprised leaving out Hooper and leaving out Cooper and guys like that. Like, I was surprised at that. Like, it didn't make sense to me. You know, Hooper's been probably one of the best back rowers for years, really. He's a stand-up player for Australia in a pack that often is probably on the back foot. It was a shame to see like it unfold for him how it has.
Was it?
I think he's almost become a bit of like, every time his face pits up on the big screen, isn't it? Like, everyone goes, boos him.
Get booed.
Yeah, it's mad, really, how this is kind of like, he's become like a bit of a villain, hasn't he,
yeah,
within rugby.
But the lad's talking about it, because ultimately when he left the role, and we spoke about it when he left, you know, you had a really good relationship with him, and you know, you really enjoyed his coaching, and other people hated the way he treated people, all that stuff. But you know, you're watching maybe some of his press conferences where he's like, "What, you don't know anything about rugby, mate? Well, hold on, Eddie, you don't know anything about rugby anymore because it's changed. And look what's happening to it." Are you boys watching that and having a bit of a chuckle, or is it, poor bloke, feel sorry for him? Or
No, some of the stuff we were watching and laughing, like the interview before he left was just like,
"Oh, the hat's on."
But it was the hat, mate. It was the hat as well. I was just thinking, why has he put that on?
It's a Cobra, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. We laughed, like watching him sort of, certainly with that interview before he flew out. And he did another one, didn't he? When I think they just lost to New Zealand in Dunedin.
Yeah.
And he was getting interviewed and he started going mad about someone behind him or something behind Jeff Wilson. Was he going like crazy about someone doing something behind it? Yeah. So boys had a laugh about, certainly in the interview about, give yourself an uppercut and things like that.
Yeah.
What was he like for you? Because you mentioned he came in after 2015. And it was a shambles with the coaching situation. You guys win the Grand Slam 2016. He must have had a pretty positive effect on you as a player.
Oh, without doubt. And he had a really, I think you've got to understand as well with Eddie, is between 16 to 20, like we won a Grand Slam and we won two Six Nations titles as well. We went to Australia, beat them summer tour. We had 18 game on the streak. Like, we had a really good run. But I think also he had brilliant assistant coaches. So you had Eddie, and then you had Steve. You had Gus Gardin for a little while before Mitch joined. Scott Wise mental doing the attack. So we were like really blessed with brilliant assistant coaches. Do you know what I mean? And then I suppose he's sort of overview of the way he wants to play and the vision and all that, and those guys then doing it. And then actually, like, towards the end, all those coaches went and did their own thing.
Can't imagine why. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, as we all know, he's a hard taskmaster. And then we didn't replace those guys with I suppose, the same qualities, which then meant he had to do more. And it kind of then just sadly kind of the results didn't come, the performance didn't come. And ultimately, as a coach, you know what comes next. But yeah, during 16 to 20, those 4 years genuinely were my most enjoyable 4 years in an England shirt. They were, without doubt. And the results, some of the performances, the Grand Slam, tied Six Nations titles, tours, all those bits were quality. They were. So I look at that period, of course, very fondly, as do some other players. And equally, Goody, some other lads will look at it and, you know, if they only played a few and then didn't get picked and couldn't get back in, or they're going to have different views. And I totally respect that. That's absolutely fine. That, you know, I get it. My view of Eddie is going to be very different to others. Equally, my view of other coaches is going to be very different to others because of potentially where you sat within that group and all those bits. So they all have an effect. So,
but undeniably, those 4 years were unbelievable for England. And we spoke about it at length on the podcast, how great Eddie was. A big thing was he made Dylan captain. No one saw Dylan being made captain, did they? Because he was an outcast before and his discipline issues. But that brought out the best in him. So he was a genius. He just stayed in the job too long and now he's looking like he doesn't know anything about rugby, mate.
I think he said before he even took the England job, I think he said, I'll do 4 years and then I'll be done.
Yeah.
I think I remember him always saying, like, I'm a 4 year, and then I'm done. In Australia, I stayed too long after 2003. And so then when he did stay, you know what I mean? It's almost like he knew.
Preempted it.
But I think he became so fond of the team, had such success for those 4 years. I think it was very hard for him to probably walk away. Harder than what he thought it was going to be when he first said that, you know? You know, it's interesting, isn't it? And then when I look at it now and I think, you know, Australia were really poor. You know, would there have been any better had he not been there? I don't know. You know, I think there would have been definitely different selections, you know, but I still think they would have been poor. I do. Under Rennie, I think so. Who knows? But I think he's probably going to Japan, isn't he?
Well, he's about to announce something, isn't he? Hey, all I'm saying is good luck to anyone that's being coached by him now. You've got to change, Eddie.
Let's take a look at the Premiership then. We spoke earlier about some England nationals coming back and some not. Do you think that this should be a joint-up approach? They should all come back at the same time? Or
No, not necessarily. Have you heard much about these hybrid contracts, Lenny?
I know they're talking about it, mate, but is it if you're in like 25 contracts or something like that? And
something like that, yeah.
But mate, we've heard this before. I mean, whether it actually gets there, I've got no idea. But they need to do something, Goody, because I think players are going to keep going abroad, mate. Young players are going to go, and it's not going to be good for the England team. Or they make it a 50 cap rule. You go abroad, then you're eligible.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the RFU have to do something.
And that's the thing. It's the RFU's responsibility to do it, not the clubs.
Yeah.
Although it's a good time because the clubs are struggling financially. But does there need to be a joined up approach? No. Because ultimately, the players are employed by their clubs first and foremost, and it's then the privilege of getting picked and playing for England and obviously getting paid to play for England. But we've got to remember, it's a 10-team premiership now. So you've only got 9 home games, and a lot of the clubs have used the World Cup players to come back to a home game, right? So Sarri's boys at the weekend, and Lenny, you said it earlier, let's see how many of them go to Newcastle away this weekend.
Yeah.
That's the game that Jim used to get the vice-captain's armband for Saracens. All the England boys, Marrow and Cruzo, would be off in Dubai on holiday. Jim, you can be VC this week. You're getting up to Newcastle away. And he's got those stories on Faz rollicking him when his back's absolutely fucked because Faz has come back tan looking $1 million. But yeah, I mean, clubs have the right to pick who they want when they want until they're dictated to a little bit if these hybrid contracts, central contracts, go ahead. So yeah, like the Leicester boys, and I think it's brilliant that Dan McKellar said to everyone, because Lenny, you're probably someone that, all due respect, you didn't play that much during the World Cup, did you? Yes, you're away for a long time.
No, I didn't.
You could have come back and gone, fuck, I want to play. But he took an approach of, I'm going to give everyone that off, and we're targeting the Quins week, because Leicester play Quins at home this weekend. The Andy Goode suite will be rammed to get all the internationals back then, because it's a home game. And so Saracens did it. Bath did it with Finn, got him back, home game. Northampton boys, Ludds has gone and played for Saints this weekend. And they all have to factor in this 1 week off. Is it 1 week off in the first 5 weeks or something, Lenny?
Yeah, 1 week off in the first 5 weeks. The other thing as well, Goody, is like we very much felt like that was perfect. Come back, have a week at home. And then once you're in, you're always in. Where if you go in for a week, let's say, and then you're off again, and then you come back in again, it's like you're in and you're gone again. And so it's, for us, it all made sense to have the first week off and then come in. Because once you're in, mate, that's it. Boom, let's go, all hands on deck, you know?
How has Dan McKellar been for you guys? Because he's sort of come in and looks like he's doing a good job so far.
We've had a lot of players away. We'll all come back. So I think the Leicester team that you've probably seen for the first few rounds is going to look very different as it is this weekend. He's a really good fella. He wants to expand our game. We've got a team with some habits of playing a certain way, which is
kick and chase,
needs to evolve. And I think we're gonna, needs to evolve. So at times, I should think we kind of look like a team that doesn't quite know what we are yet, but we're very clear about what we want to be.
I mean, it does take time. And Dan, I've spoken to Dan a couple of times since he's been over, and he's a cracking bloke. And I know Australia were keen to try and get him back. Now Eddie's gone, but Dan's been clear that he's settled in Leicester, he's happy here, and it's a long-term project for him. His kids are at school and all that stuff. But it is hard. You know, ultimately, the Leicester lads have been coached by Steve in that certain way, which was bloody successful. They ended up winning the Premiership. And then last year was difficult, wasn't it, Lenny? You know, Steve, there was one eye on the England job when Eddie's gone, and then the continuity with Wiggy, and it was like, we know Wiggy's going. It's a really hard position for players to be in, because you're in the here and now, but also, you know, it's difficult because you know there's a new head coach coming in. So Leicester will evolve, and the Premiership's going to be so exciting this year. It's only Newcastle. I don't want to bag my old club Newcastle, but it's only them that look like they don't know how to win a game at the minute. And they're open about their budget that they've spent. Anyone else of those nine teams look like they could beat anyone. And that's how exciting the Prem is. Not many people gave Leicester a chance to go down to Bath and win, because Bath went to Saracens the week before. Yes, Saracens had a weaker team, but Finn's back, the magic man, and Bath go and beat Saracens. But Leicester grafted out a victory in the rain down at the Wreck, which, being honest, we haven't done that well down there for the last few years, have you, Lenny?
No, we haven't, mate. No, we haven't.
So you know, everyone can kind of beat everyone except for poor old Newcastle. So the Prem's going to be bloody exciting. You've got to win your home games. And this weekend for Leicester, I can't wait to see Lenny back. I presume he's starting, because he said the team's going to look very different. Any comments on that, Lenny, starting this week?
Get me in the mix, mate. I'm ready to go. Get me out there, mate.
Well, yeah, I don't want to see you in the corporate. I don't want to see you in the Andy Goode suite, because that means you're not playing.
I won't be in the corporate, mate, until post-game. Mate. Yeah.
What do you make of Bath leading Finn Russell go on holiday at this time of the season?
Well, it's their prerogative. Let's not forget, Finn played his last game for Scotland, right? And he's rocked up on the Monday morning to a new club. So the last game was in Paris against Ireland, that do-or-die game. I remember being sat here and Jim was talking it up, going, this is our greatest chance ever.
Biggest game in their history, I think, were the words.
Yeah.
And they absolutely died.
Yeah, and they, Lenny loves it. And, you know, Finn's rocked up at Bath on Monday morning. Doesn't have to do that. But obviously this was planned and agreed that he'd have this week off, Northampton away. And they, you know, yes, Bath could have beaten Northampton, but it's about player welfare, because they also know that when Finn will play in the Six Nations, they'll get him back in the fallow weeks, even though there's no Premiership games, but they've got to manage him throughout a whole year. And so, like everyone else, that was the week they chose to give it off, and now they're like, oh, if we'd have had Finn, we'd have won. You don't know that. Finn might have got injured in the first minute. You just don't know what would have happened, but that was a decision that Van Graham took and the club took with Finn, and he's had a hell of a week in New York, apparently, so he's happy.
A relaxed Finn Russell was a Finn Russell you're going to get the most out of, isn't he?
Yeah.
Give him holidays.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see him in the Prem. Let's not beat around the bush. He is a world-class talent. He has got the odd error in him, as we know, but he brings a smile to everyone's face. If you're a neutral, Bath fans are going to love him, and he's going to be brilliant for viewing figures in the Prem this year. And you know, Lenny, I'm sure you've played against him for Scotland. And
yeah, I think he's an exceptional talent. I love the way he plays. Marcus is kind of plays that way. Not the same, but in terms of that freedom and the ability to move the ball and try kicks and different cross kicks and distribute, take the line on. I think his ability to take the line on and get it out the back door is class. So he's a great addition to the Prem. He's going to put bums on seats, mate, and he's going to put people tuning in on the telly. So great to see him in the Prem, actually.
Exeter completely dominated their match, but didn't really show until later on the scoreboard, did it?
Yeah, I mean, possession-wise and stats-wise, I watched the game slightly hungover. I was like, kids, shh, have your iPads. Daddy wants to watch the rugby. And we'll go to the fireworks afterwards. All right, and you can have some sweets. Yeah, no problem. But listen, Exeter, I'll be open and honest. At the start of the season, I thought Exeter would struggle this year because of all the players that went out the door, all the experience, all the caps, all the DNA of that club that's been successful. And these young kids have come in, especially the home games, have absolutely ripped it up. Yes, the scoreline didn't show a massive victory, but they were in complete control of that game. Physically, you know, you look at all the stats, 72% possession, 80% territory. Yes, there'll be work-ons around finishing stuff off, and Bristol, you know, took their opportunities really well. Crossfield kicks, Richard Lane gets a hat-trick, Callum Sheedy with three unbelievable kicks. If I tried them 100 times, I wouldn't get three right, I don't reckon. And he's got three out of three perfect crossfield kicks. So Exeter, Wyatt at fullback, was brilliant. They'll be frustrated that they made it as hard as it was in terms of the scoreline. But when you look at performance and you talk about some of the young players that have come through this year, who not many people would have known about because of the Knowles, the Cowan Dickies, a lot of the other players that have been in that Chiefs shirt for years. Faye Wabosa on the wing, Tom Wyatt fullback. You know, Hoggy's been playing fullback for a long time at Exeter over the last few years. Tom Wyatt's come in this year and started carving up, especially at home. And, you know, Hendrickson at 12 hasn't played that much. There's been other guys there. Harvey Skinner at 10. Tom Cairns at 9 as well. These are all young kids, aren't they, Lenny, that you wouldn't have expected what they've produced so far?
No, you wouldn't. I think what you look at Exeter, I think you can tell they've had a really good pre-season. They're a team that aren't waiting for people to come back. So like Leicester, for instance, like we've had a really good pre-season, but they know...
Cavalry's coming.
Yeah, and we can only evolve it so much because we've got to wait for everyone to come back to then kick on again.
Yeah.
And a lot of teams are having to do that, whereas Exeter, a team like, this is how we're going to play, this is what we're about, we've got all pre-season to do it. And they look like a team that's really clear about what they are. And I think for Leicester, for other clubs that are integrating loads of players back, it almost takes a little bit of time. So
it's harder, isn't it?
It is, mate, yeah. Because they can only do so much pre-season because it's like, well, hang on, like you say, dude, the Cavalry's arriving and then we can kind of kick on again.
Yeah, a massive shout out as well, Russ Tuima, second row. My God, good luck tackling him when you play against Exeter this year, Young Z. He is a strong boy.
Mate, he is, isn't he? Yeah. He looks all right around close range, picking yeah. The go and strong old boy. They've always done that. They've almost kept that tradition of big, heavy pack.
Yeah.
And he's heavy, and there's a few heavy bumblers in there. So, Sandy Park, here we come.
So the chit of the banker hasn't gone away after the World Cup. We're still talking about it in the Premiership. So Steve Hansen's mentioned getting rid of it. Now Nigel Owens has mentioned getting rid of it. Do you guys have any thoughts on keeping it or getting rid?
I would get rid of it, I think.
Yes!
Really?
Yes! It's a stain on the game.
Oh, Andy, right. Let's hear it from a player's point of view then.
I think, again, it's a system where referees, I feel, should have the ultimate power of making these decisions. And when they're a little bit unsure, they don't know, it's like, right, I'll yell at you because that's, like, I know it's bad enough and I'll bunker it because I'm not prepared to kind of make the big decision and I'm going to leave it to someone else. I just think you have to, whether the decision's wrong or right, let's say they get it slightly right and you get a red card and it should be downgraded to yellow, that can be dealt with after. I just think the game needs to be more quicker, less stoppages and all that stuff. And I just think the bunker system is something that I just feel like it's going to intervene, come in the way a bit too much, like things that are obviously need to be dealt with there and then it can be dealt with quickly. And then you have to stop the game to tell it, you know, you get the captains over to say, oh, just to let you know, the bunker's doing this and he's decided to do that. It's like,
yeah.
I'm not a massive fan of it, if I'm honest.
My caveat to that then, England-Ireland last year, you're playing.
Yeah.
Freddie Stewart, Jaco Pyper gives him a red. Never a red.
Never a red.
Never a red. And I speak to a lot of referees, as we know. And it's easy for them now. And they all say, well, I've just got to give you yellow. And it's not my fault. It's not my decision. But the pressure, you flip it, the pressure they're under when they've got a split decision to make or a very quick decision to make, they find it very difficult. So,
but that one was a shocker though, wasn't it?
It was a shocker. But without the bunker, you get more of those than you do with the bunker.
What do you reckon? Do you know cricket, they obviously have a captain's call and they can come and, do you know what I mean, challenge it?
As in take away the bunker or take away the TMO and it's down to the captain.
Yeah, maybe you can go, right, no, you need to just check that. Like, or for a TMO that's a try given and you go, no, I want that, you need to check that last pass.
Yeah.
And you force them to go up there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good shout.
And if you get it wrong, you lose it.
Yeah. Imagine being the player's like, no, he definitely didn't score it. And then check it, skips. Yeah. And then Faz is your captain and he goes at you because you got it wrong. Imagine, you don't want to be on the end of that, do you?
And it might stop players from going down, you know, and to get the TMO to look at it.
There is a bit of that as well, isn't there? Yeah.
Now, is it simulation?
Yeah.
There is, mate. And they need to, this is such a...
Players hold their heads all the time, right?
They need to be really careful here because I think they've got to snap out of the game because there's a very difference between players holding their head going, I've been glanced or caught slightly, but I'm absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But I'm going to lay here and do this because I need it checked just to try and get something.
Yeah.
And I think they need to be like, if you lay there for a second or whatever, boom, HIA, off you go, yeah. Go checked. Because yeah. If it's that bad, you've got to lay there, fine, or, you know, check it. And then I think you'll stop players doing that.
Is that something the boys talk about or not? Or is it, I mean, you obviously see a lot of the rugby and you see people do it. And you know the sort of people that are feigning it, not feigning injury, but just trying to look for it.
Players probably get frustrated with probably inconsistency of it. Like the inconsistencies in terms of, you know, Curry's red first game and then, was it Jesse Creel did a hit on the Scottish guy the next day?
Not even looked
and
at.
And like nothing. Yeah, not even looked at. So the inconsistencies are frustrating players, and therefore I think some lads do it just because they're like, if unless I do it, I don't think they're going to check it. I just think they need to be careful of that, mate. We don't want simulation. And I think refs need to also penalise it, mate. So if someone's laying there like that and you look at it and it's like, there's nothing in that, actually, yeah. You can have a penalty reverse for being a...
There you go.
You know what?
I'll see you next Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, then you can get penalised for it.
But it's like the nines, isn't it? So was it Faf de Klerk that chucked the ball deliberately at someone at, trying to pretend he was passing it to Andre Pollard for a drop goal in the World Cup?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The ref was like, no, you ain't having that. That was against you boys, wasn't it? Was it against England? I'm trying to remember.
It might be against some, but again, like, that's just smart reffing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like in theory, it's a penalty, right?
Yeah.
But you also know he's only doing it to get a pen. So you're like, nah, you can't have it, mate.
You ever done that? You ever chucked a ball at someone because they're offside?
Of course
he is. Oh, yeah. I absolutely have, yeah.
Goes down when someone knocks his head as well.
Yeah, no. Lenny's farming stock, his dad would never allow him to do that. Or his brother.
Right. Let's finish things off then with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, we're going to start off, and I'm going to start off in South Africa. Sorry, Lenny. But I'm going to say it. Razzie gets a mention in the good this week. I do love Razzie, but he's staying on with South Africa and going back to being head coach. So big news for the South Africans. Obviously, Jacques Nienaber is going off to Leinster. So big news for them. Let's go to France, and let's mention two very English boys. Joe Simmons and Dan Robson get a mention in the good this week with their team, Poe. They are top of the top 14. They beat Toulouse 13-9 at home. And they've started the season with a bang. So massive shout out to those boys and the Poe lads. Connacht get a mention in the good as well. They edged Ulster 22-20 at home and are 3-3 in the URC now. Top of the table. Big shout out to those boys. Rich Lane gets a shout out for his hat trick for Bristol against Exeter. 3 tries, 3 kicks, 3 absolutely brilliant finishes as well. But that doesn't win the good this week because the good is going to be won by Tyrone Green. You talk about good finishes. Marcus Smith off the bench for Quinns.
Yes.
Crossfield kick. You will not see a better, like a flying Superman finish.
That was unbelievable.
How good.
Tyrone Green, he's been out injured for a while, and that is one hell of a finish, and then celebrates in the corner as well. Diving in midair, catches it midair, gets the ball down. Absolute worldie of a finish. You'll do well to see a better finish anywhere this season. So Tyrone Green is going to win the good this week. The bad, few bits of bad. La Rochelle are going to get a mention in the bad this week. They lost away at Oyonnax after losing at home to Cass this week. Not a good start from Rog. And even Rog said, I hope they don't change the coach. I think that means when a coach says that, you know he's securing his contract, right? We need a change, but hopefully it's not the head coach. So La Rochelle haven't started well, but they'll be getting more and more players back as the weeks progress. Zebra get a mention in the bad this week as well. They took 50 at home to the Bulls, so not a good performance by those boys. Sam Costello gets a mention in the bad, not for him, but for his injuries, shoulder and hamstring injuries. And then they're looking pretty thin at fly half now, Wales. They've got to go looking for other 10s. Oh, Gas, caught a Welsh.
Yeah.
I'm out of the 3-year... What is it? 5 years?
3 years.
Anyway,
window,
I have to play
mate.
For Wales now. Yeah, there you go. That gets mentioned in the bad. And talking about the bad, having the Wales versus Barbados fixture when all the regions are playing, and the fact that the Ospreys went and played in London as well against the Sharks. The Welsh, they are so muddled. And some people found this funny. I didn't find it funny at all. Dan Bigger has carried Welsh rugby for years. And then he goes to take a conversion for Toulon. And his back finally goes from the weight of carrying Welsh rugby for a long time. But poor bloke, eh? Our bad's his back.
Poor guy. It was just like, it reminded me of, remember when Jim was playing for Saracens and he did his back?
Yeah.
Just before he retired and he's going ruck to ruck and he couldn't bend down.
Hilarious. That's because he was carrying the A team though on a Monday night, Jim. Not the starting team, but there we go. Jim, we miss you. We don't miss you. But yeah, poor Dan Bigger. That gets mentioned, the bad. But the bad this week, unfortunately, goes to my Newcastle Falcons team of old. Another old club of mine. Started the Premiership pretty badly. Another defeat, heavy defeat at the hands of Quinns. And unfortunately, they are bottom of the Premiership. So Newcastle get the bad this week. They have played 4, lost 4. And then the ugly. One bit of very ugly news this week was Api Rotuni-Yuruawa, who was on Barbarians duty, got charged with sexual assault against 3 women in Cardiff last week across 2 different nights. Appeared in court, charged with sexual assault and all that stuff. So a really ugly look. And obviously on Barbar's duty, wasn't good for them. And he'll be in court pretty soon. So that's why Api Rotuni-Yuruawa gets the ugly this week.
Cheers, Goody. And you've got a shout out to finish off with, don't you?
I have. Firstly, Sunderland lads, Sunderland RFC, top boys. But secondly, a big shout out to Strabane RFC. They've just had their 100-year gala ball, and there's a big push now with a GoFundMe page to secure their own pitch and clubhouse. So if you're involved in the club, get on their social media channels and get behind the campaign on GoFundMe to raise as much money as you can so they can push and get their own pitch and clubhouse sorted.
Thanks, Scooty. Thanks, Ben. And thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and make sure that you've subscribed on Spotify.
Rugby Spod.
Oh, sounds so much better than Jim doing it.
Did sound nice.
Spotted pod, 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 pod.